The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on September 21st, 2025. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good to see you all today on this pretty cheery day. Well, today I thought I would talk about the 10th grave precept. It's very subtle, and we might easily miss what it's pointing out. The 10th grave precept is, it's Bodhidharma's verses on the precepts. Well, they all begin, what is it? Oh, yeah, self-nature is clear and obvious within the one Dharma, not holding a dualistic view of ordinary and enlightened, is called the precept of not abusing the triple treasure, the three treasures. So not holding a dualistic view of ordinary and enlightened. This isn't, I can't say it's not easy, but it's very subtle to really understand what's being pointed out there. I suppose I could say a couple words about those opening lines, particularly the one with self-nature. Well, I've said plenty about that elsewhere. But within the one Dharma, that would be one with a capital O, Dharma with a capital D. And in this case, that Dharma is really is pointing to reality with a capital R. One reality, one truth, one Dharma. And one, capital O, meaning it's not one in two or three or among many. It's unique. It's one. As Wangpo says, there's only the one mind. There he calls that Dharma mind. Mind with a capital M, besides which nothing exists. And he's not playing with words or trying to speak poetically. He means just what he says. And that's what's difficult about this precept. If there's anything difficult about it, it's really not difficult. We make it difficult. As my teacher used to say, you know, the reality, truth, teaching of the awakened is not difficult. It's not complicated. We're complicated. Our minds are complicated. We complicate things with our minds. We grasp things, ideas, thoughts, feelings, expressions of any kind at all. But we grasp them with our minds, and then we find it kind of difficult. What are we talking about here? Well, in this particular case, what's being pointed out is when he's saying, not holding a dualistic view of ordinary and enlightened. Yeah, this is the precept of not abusing the three treasures. The three treasures being Buddha, Dharma, in this case, Dharma with a capital D, means the teaching of the awakened. Buddha, the awakened, those who wake up, see this reality as it is. And then Dharma, reality with a capital R, truth with a capital T. Not your truth or my truth or Buddha's truth, or anything. Qualified truths of various ways. Reality, truth. That's the teaching. But in this case, it's referring to the teaching of the awakened, the teaching that points to Dharma as reality, as truth. And when the awakened see this, realize this directly, they'll speak in a way to direct our attention to that. This kind of teaching, with a capital D, I would give it a capital D, it's not ordinary teaching. This is Dharma. So not abusing the three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, and then Sangha. Sangha is, we could say a community, but it is of those who, including you. Actually, you're included in all three of these, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. But it's a matter of realizing this. But Sangha is the community of people who take this way, this practice, seriously, and want to practice it, want to really understand what it is that the awakened have pointed out for us. And that's Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, the three treasures. So in the 10th precept then, it says, not holding a dualistic view. This is the third line of the Bodhidharma's four lines for each of the great precepts. This is the third line. The third line always kind of is pointing out something there for us now. Not holding a dualistic view of ordinary and enlightened. What exactly is that pointing to? Suzuki Roshi, in his book, I believe it's in Zen Mind and Beginner's Mind, near the beginning of the book, he said people often think that Zen practice, Zen teaching is difficult. It's hard to understand. It's difficult. But he said it's not difficult for that reason. Or it's not difficult also, maybe people think, well, it's difficult, it's hard to wake up, to become enlightened. This is difficult. Suzuki says, no, this is not what's difficult. He said, what is difficult for us is to make our minds pure and to keep our minds pure. Not that we can keep them pure, but to come back to purity of mind. Well, what would that be, to make our minds pure? Is it like to think lofty thoughts or good, wholesome, clean thoughts, whatever, you know, something like this, to have a pure mind, no bad motives, you know, anything like that. That's not really what he means there. To purify our minds is simply, as Bodhidharma says there in that 10th precept, he warns of, you know, holding a dualistic view. Okay, this is to depart from pure mind. And what Bodhidharma, or what Suzuki Roshi was referring to there, that, you know, Zen is not difficult. What's difficult is this matter of maintaining a pure mind. And that is a mind that is not holding, not just not holding dualistic views. This is a mind that's not holding views. This leads to all kinds of other teachings, which I've pointed to many times. Like Dogen, when he tells his monks, the reason you don't wake up is because you don't let go of your views. This is to not maintain a pure mind. It's not to then have the right view. What the Buddha referred to right view when he was asked, what's the right, people say, well, this is the right view, this is the right, you should think this, believe this, whatever. And the Buddha pointed out, yeah, that's quite doubtful because a person was doubting all of this. So what is right view? And the Buddha just simply points out, in effect, what he points out is that it's a not held view, a view that you can't hold. If we actually see this reality, here's your enlightenment now, but if you actually see this, you will see that it isn't holding a view. Because what is seen cannot be held as a view, as a concept, as an idea, a belief. Once we start doing that, pretty soon, some of them are better than others. You know, some will put up and in a high place, and others, or we might scorn them. And, you know, but here's the messy, difficult, painful, argumentative place, or this place where we argue and fight. Even within our own minds, And even among people who we might feel are kind of like-minded, we join together in various ways because we hold particular views alike. But then sometimes we find that maybe, well, I don't know if I agree with that point there. And then we can easily get into a fight over things like that. This is the noisy, messy human world. But what the awakened are pointing to is not that. It is not participating in that when they offer their teaching, Dharma with a capital D, not ordinary teaching, just small d Dharma, where we are presenting a view and holding, this is a better view than that, this is more true than that. Yeah. For most of us, that's it. I mean, that's how the world is, and we want to find the best view and all of that. But we have to understand at some point that, well, this is holding a dualistic view, not just of ordinary enlightenment, but this is just holding dualistic views, split between good and bad and right and wrong, all of that. And then we hear the teaching of the awakened, we think, well, and boy, that's pretty good. And then, oh, enlightenment too, what is that? That sounds pretty good. Well, we'll think in these terms. Enlightenment is kind of lofty, and the delusion is down there. And we don't want the delusion. We might sense, yeah, I'm deluded, which is a view, and it's an incorrect view. It's not a right view. It is a view you're holding. You might hold that view. You might hold the view that you're enlightened. I'm enlightened. That's also an incorrect view. It's a held view. But the awakened, their teaching isn't encouraging us to grasp views like that. And of course, we don't know any other way, really. Being born into this world and among other people in a culture or whatever, learning a language, all of this. This is all these various views that we might learn and take on, learns the good ones and the bad ones, all of that stuff. And that really does seem to be it. And this is it leads to a very sorrowful place, this world. We have that chant that we often recite here at the stone before when we end a ceremony or something. In this world of emptiness, may we exist in muddy water. This is that muddy water. May we exist in muddy water with purity. Suzuki Roshi speaking of purity of mind. With purity like a lotus. And what does that refer to? Well, in this noisy, messy, muddy water world, it's holding views and holding views and holding views. And by the way, I haven't said that the Buddhists point out that we shouldn't hold views. That's pretty difficult. And that isn't really the point exactly. But it is from this holding views and holding views. But what the awakened are trying to help us see, you don't need to do that. You don't need to hold views. A little bit, maybe here and there, in different circumstances that come your way, and you deal with that, and then you move on and drop whatever views you might be holding about that. We can do that in a very fluid, liquid sort of way. Not to hold them tight, no, they're solid, and this is right. And then we might envision that what the Buddhas are teaching, you know, to become enlightened, is to finally get the right one here. This is just simply not it at all. You have to understand, and what I'm talking about now today, and what that 10th precept is about, is to realize that, you know, this is a kind of the ordinary way we approach everything. And then we'll even take up this practice of the awakened and kind of treat it in the same way. And we'll hear them offering it because they're using language, words, there's ideas in their concepts. And then we'll grasp these and grasp these. Though if you pay very careful attention, they're always also talking in a way to kind of help you to drop that. I used to liken it in some class I taught, I don't know which one it was, but you know, for the awakened, if they're up at a chalkboard, it took me a while to realize what I was doing. I'm left-handed, so I was trying to demonstrate this with my left hand, but for you right-handed people, if you get up to a chalkboard and you just start writing it out, what this teaching is, with your right hand, and you come along with the eraser in your left hand, and as you're writing here, you're erasing as you go. That's how the awakened teach. It's not written out there to be left on the, you know, you don't write then, what is it, save on the chalkboard so the janitor doesn't come and erase it, you know. No, you erase it within seconds of putting it up there in the first place. Of course, with our grasping kind of minds, we think, well, what's the purpose of that? What's the use then of even taking this up and all that if what you're going to do is just get rid of it right away? There's also like Suzuki Roshi, momentarily my mind had slipped on this in the beginning of his Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, where he says, when my talk is over, your listening is over. No need to remember. You know, and when I first read that, I didn't understand this yet. And I thought, well, what's the point of reading this or listening to you if when the talk is over, my listening's over, there's no need to remember? Of course, we've all experienced this. I certainly experienced it with my teacher, Katagiri Roshi. When he's talking, and I'm thinking, oh, and it's just really hitting the heart, you know. And, wow, that was powerful, you know. A little while later, I'm talking to somebody who wasn't there, maybe, and they say, well, what did Roshi talk about, you know? And I might be saying, yeah, it was a great talk, all that. And what did he say? And it's like, I don't know what to say. I can't remember exactly. Well, I sort of. That's universal. That goes with this Dharma with a capital D. You really can't hold it. And the teacher, even as they're speaking, one who's awake anyway, let's put it this way, they realize that there. So even as they put it out there, they're not holding it. But using it a way to direct our attention, all of us, including the teacher, to this true nature of reality, which is very liquid and flowing and changing all the time, very fluid. There's no part of it that is frozen. Once we hit a frozen view or object, a concept, a belief in the mind, whatever, we realize that this isn't of the nature of reality. This is the nature of a grasping mind. And while the awakened don't tell us to, don't do that, don't hold ideas, or don't hang on to ideas, that sort of thing. We're human beings, you know. We think. We have to think. We have to, just to get along in our daily lives, we have to think. But we can learn not to grasp, or at least not to grasp tightly for more than a moment or two. Then we can begin to live in a way that matches the actual fluidity of life itself. Life itself, which is utterly fluid. You might think utterly fluid, what, from beginning to end? Well, there's really no discernible beginning, as the Buddha pointed out. Nor an end. It is always thus. This is your self nature, by the way. Always thus. It's always like this. Like what? Well, nothing particular here. Nothing frozen, nothing persisting as we think things exist here. There's persisting things. No, it's just as this fluidity itself. And this is the one and only permanence. There is. It's always thus. This is what Bodhidharma then is referring to, a self-nature at the beginning of all these. And it's clear and it's obvious. If it's so clear and obvious, then why don't I get it? Why do most of us kind of remain oblivious to it? It's because we hold views. We grasp our views. We think we'll find actual truth, reality, with capital R, capital T, in what it is that we grasp. And we spend our time, depending on what path we might take, but we'll learn things you know, to help us along that path or whatever. And that's fine, up to a point. But always be watching for the ramifications of whatever it is you do when it reaches out into the world in various ways. There are many things that we can do that are very, bring on a lot of disruption, pain, suffering, confusion for others and for yourself as well, for your culture. This is, and it isn't like that's bad, but this is what's going to happen. Just see that, know that, understand why that is occurring. And now ask for yourself, realize what's going on in your own mind in regards to all of that. And we don't have to live that way. Only using these things in a small passing way and then letting them go, whatever it might be, and not trying to force this way of life or my way of thinking or my belief here about heaven or hell or whatever else it might be onto others. This is the painful human world that we continuously wallow in and create for ourselves without any real understanding of what is going on or what we can do about it. But what we can do is wake up. Wake up to what? Not to anything out there like that. Just wake up to this mind right here. It might seem like, yes, your mind. I always tell you, watch your mind. Your mind might be grasping this or that. Just watch that. See that happening. See how it happens. See what it leads to. It never leads to awakening. Awakening is just simply in not hanging on to any of that. Letting it go. Letting it serve for its limited purpose and time, and then let it go. And also keeping an eye out for, well, how much of a disturbance is this creating in the world? And it isn't that, you know, it's creating evil and doing evil and that sort of thing, or that it's doing good, you know. That's not the way to understand the world, good and bad, right and wrong. No, it's just, it unfolds just like this, as I've been pointing to. And you can't, you know, like the wise Chinese farmer, I won't repeat that story, but it's, you know, who can say what's good or bad? Well, what about the awakened then? Is there any? They just continue to watch this situation. And when it comes to your own action and your speech, do those things that aren't contributing to the division, the anger, the hatred, and even in careless ways, where that wasn't really intended. But now watching carefully, so we just look for that. What is the concern here for this, when Suzuki Roshi is talking about, you know, this purity of mind, maintaining and finding and maintaining this purity of mind is just simply that. And it is in watching the views as they're grasped and the entanglements that now occur and entangle more things beyond and all that. Just watch that. Realize how it is that we operate in a way that just continues that sort of thing until we have this tangled web of pain and sorrow and difficulty, and it seems like there's no way out. The way out is to realize that we're really not in that situation. And if we're watchful of it, we don't have to keep creating it. That's because of that, we're not actually in that situation. We just keep creating that. But we do that through ignoring what is actually being lived out, which is very peaceful. You know, so we can begin to learn to do these things that and just allow the natural way of things to just settle out if we just leave them alone, basically. But of course, continue to watch. There might be moments here and there where you can, you know, help someone or whatever. But don't operate out of the goal of, better stop here pretty soon, but the goal of this teaching, of this practice is, it's not to become enlightened as such, you know, to attain enlightenment. when we hold this dualistic view of ordinary and enlightened, you know, we might think that what the ordinary understanding of this is, well, we practice this to get somewhere. That's how we do, why we do everything we do, isn't it? Because we want to get somewhere with it, or to vanquish, you know, the bad and all that, whatever it might be. But again, this is not that. So there's no attainment, too. We say, you know, even though we talk about attainment. But then there's no attainment. Then if there's no attainment, what's the point of doing this? What's the point of listening to Suzuki Roshi when he's giving his talk, if it doesn't matter? But we're missing, we're missing the subtlety of what is being pointed out that actually can't be spelled out on the chalkboard or anything. It can't be set out there. You have to just see it. And there's the enlightenment. And it is no different than being in this deluded world, this world of muddy water. But may we exist in muddy water with purity. This can be done. Well, it's not that we remain pure moment to moment and never, you know, that I don't know that that's possible. But if we understand this, and as my teachers say, the measure of a practice is and how quickly, if we see that we're getting into the entanglements, and how quickly can we get it back on the path? That's what this practice is. This is what we try not to lose sight of. To the extent then that we do that, and this is through holding dualistic views. Oh, and by the way, too, I should say, I don't know if I did say this, but dualistic views, that's just simply what a held view is. Or we could say a wrong view or something like that. But it's a held view. It is, I don't want to characterize it as wrong or whatever. It's best not to do that. But it's a held view, as opposed to what the Buddha said when he spoke of right view. He's talking about a view that is not frozen, a view that is not grasped, a view that is not believed. You have some idea of it, and you're promoting that now. And very subtle. We don't have to hold views. And with that, at some point we might realize what this freedom of awakening is. Okay, well, maybe I've said enough here today. You have any questions? Yes?
I don't know if it's a question, just kind of maybe an observation.
Yeah.
But I remember, you know, when I was pretty young in practice and I would hear three treasures. I took them very literally.
Literally?
Literally.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, there's the Buddha, and then there are these teachings, and then there's this community of people that I hang out with here at Dharma Field. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then as time kind of moved along, and I started thinking about it more, I said, well, no, it's everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you try to, like, I'm thinking about ways of, like, you know, how do we grab onto that view, and how is that, like, disparaging the triple treasures? Well, if everything is essentially these treasures, and you start to grab onto these views, like, well, that political group was horrible, this was fantastic, or whatever it may be. Now you've just broken it all again.
Yeah.
And you're not operating out of anything with a holistic mindset.
Exactly.
And then you're just trapped right back into it.
Yeah.
You know?
And once we fragment the world that way, and now you're going to have, there's going to be fighting and arguing, whatever.
You
know, there'll be just disruption. Yeah. And by the way, that is what consciousness is breaking up the world. And you know that we never, I hope we don't give the impression here in these teachings that consciousness is a bad thing. Probably, if anything, the other way around. But that's what, as we understand in Buddhism, today, like in AI and stuff like this, you know, they're trying to create machines that'll be conscious and stuff. They don't understand consciousness because it isn't something generated by a machine. Consciousness is the world itself, but it's not consciousness. It's a little more subtle than that. We call that mind, and that mind with a capital M. And it's not mind belonging to any particular fragment, like a person or an object, like is a tree conscious and stuff like this, or does it have mind and whatever. No, you'll never be able to defend ideas like that. And right from the very start, you can see how divided that is. Everything within it is on the basis of that. Mind, that one mind that Bodhidharma spoke of, I used to puzzle with that capital O, one mind, nothing else but the one mind. Yeah, well, one aspect of this one mind, though, is this factor of consciousness, which is that as it operates, it's just a And the visions, though, are also even with time. Now we have time as well, and space, and things like that. Also with ideas and things like this, no particular location in space. But all of these things that are being broken out now, but that is with consciousness. And the problem we suffer from is that's not a bad thing. Even the fact that we grasp it, we don't need to characterize that as bad. But now there's going to be the suffering now and the confusion and the trying to find the best way. All this anxiety and the dualism of it all and all of that. We can see through that. And it is possible to wake up and to realize what that is. And you don't have to engage it, at least not in the way that we ordinarily do. Still seeing myself as one of the fragments here too, broken out, and I want to get things to go my way and to make it better for me and maybe my friends and stuff like that. Well, here's this miserable, confused human world again. So it's a matter of just seeing how it works and not being caught in it. And that's about all this is. But that's what's difficult. Suzuki Roshi says difficult. You have to purify the mind. Which isn't to make it so pure that there's no divisions within it. No, in my mind, it's not only not possible, but it's not necessary. A lot of this is functional and useful for us in many ways. But it's a matter of realizing the true nature of this reality itself, which is just mind itself, which is consciousness. Consciousness is already here. It comes along with the universe, we might say. Except it's the thing that makes the universe appear. As maybe one thing, now what is it now? And now, we used to think it started at a certain point, the Big Bang. I always had my doubts about that, but now it's beginning to look, maybe not. Maybe with these new telescopes they have, they're now seeing fully formed galaxies at a time when, according to the Big Bang, there shouldn't even be light. I mean, there was light, but you can't see it. But anyway, never mind all that. But we do see it. Now we see there's fully formed galaxies within this distance. Up till now, we hadn't been able to see anything. Anyway, but that's something else again. I really got us off track, didn't I? Sorry. Yeah. Anything else? Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.